And your Radio Central host right now is me, Joe Garagiola. A living legend of Olympic track and field, Jesse Owens is our guest in just a few minutes. He has some pertinent comments on the present Olympic boycott movement by a segment of Negro athletes. Hear Jesse Owens in about 2 minutes from now, or as long as it takes David Rose's orchestra to play High Chaparral.
Driving gets monotonous. You can get the driving drowsies. Don't take extra chances. Pull over and fight back with No-Doze. No-Doze has the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription. And it's not habit-forming. No-Doze. No car should be without it.
When you think of the name Jesse Owens, certain indelible images instantly flash in your mind. His fantastic speed, strength, his grace and his versatility, his unprecedented feat at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, where he won four gold medals, his quiet dignity as he stood in the winner's circle four times and four times forced Adolf Hitler to leave the stadium early to avoid shaking hands with this U.S. Negro who had personally waged a one-man war on the dictator's master race theories. Well, the name Jesse Owens is every bit as respected today in the sports fraternity as it was in 1936, and we're very pleased to have him as our monitor guest. And Jesse, I understand you just got back from a visit to Berlin. Tell us how you felt when you were there this time.
Well, Joe, back in 1936, of course, there was this feeling of Aryan supremacy, and we didn't know what was going to happen on our way there. Once we got there, we found that the German people were really wonderful people to all of the athletes. I, in particular, had a very, very wonderful time with the German people, but we didn't do so well with Adolf Hitler.
But you had what is almost a comparable situation, a boycott.
Yes, as the present day. Now, return to Berlin is quite in a contrast to what is happening today. Now, say, for instance, we had this boycott in 1936, and it was primarily whether the Jewish population of this nation felt whether or not the Americans should compete in the games in Berlin because of Adolf Hitler. Today, we've got a situation in this country which happens to be turned to the other side of Black America, of where people feel that the injustices of this nation, yes, are plentiful. But I have taken the position that in this country, we do have a lot of injustices, but I'm looking at the area by which we're able to bridge the difference of these injustices And to me, Joe, and as you know, being in athletics, what it has meant to every citizen of this country and the kind of thing that it's doing. Now, I look at the boys that have been participating in the games in the past, and I'm looking at the reception that they received, and I'm looking at the things that they did when they returned home. And I'm looking at him because he happens to be the future leader of this nation, and he's going to have to be able to judge, because you can say whatever you will or may about America. There is no country in the world to live as you live in this nation.
Well put, Jesse. I'd have to say you're against the boycott.
I'm very much against it. Very much against it.
How about the charges they make against you personally? Professor Harry Edwards, father of the boycott, has in effect called you and Uncle Tom. What's your reaction to that?
Well, let's say this, Joe, that yes, maybe my ideas perhaps is not in keeping, but I believe this. I believe that there's every citizen of this nation has a certain amount of responsibility. He has a responsibility to the home from which he comes, to the institution of learning in which he attends, the community in which he lives, and certainly to the house of God in which he belongs. And I do believe that these are the fundamental things that make America what it is today. Now, maybe I am not as modern as most people, but there are certain basic fundamentals that we have in this nation that has always endured through all the things that have gone. Sometimes you say, yes, patience. Sometimes we say, we've waited a long time for this. But preparation is important, too. And I'm looking at the youngster today. How prepared is he to take over certain responsibilities within his community? And the job, because as I look around today, and I look at the youngsters whom are holding certain jobs, and I look at our nation today, which is, I think in terms of Ralph Bunche, I think in terms of Brooks as a senator, I think in terms of the congressmen that they have in this nation, and I'm thinking in terms of the cities that have elected Negro mayors.
Well, Jesse, you think that there are more militant leaders than there are militant followers?
I think so. There are more militant leaders than followers when we take the percentages. As I talk to people around the nation, and we talk about the boycott, and which we're against it, and they are with you because they feel that they are. But it's a time now that I think that the clear-thinking people of this nation, and particularly so of the Negro people, that we've got to get together now and begin to state our own cases and the communities in which we live and what they're doing within those communities to make it a better world and a better place for mankind to live.
Do you think in sports that we'll ever reach that utopia where in track and field the only race will be to the finish line, and in baseball the only race will be to first base to beat the ball?
Well, Joe, we got it now. You look at baseball today, you look at professional football, and you look at professional basketball, and as our TV that brings the games into the homes of people, people are not concerned with the color of a man's skin. They're concerned today with the victory that that school is going to make. Now, I watched the UCLA game and Houston game in Houston, Texas. And people weren't concerned with who was playing, but on that floor were 10 men. Of the 10 men, the 8 were Negroes. Nobody made a comment. And Big E, Elvin Hayes, was the hero of that game. People didn't say whether he was Negro.
Well, what do you think these people with the boycott, what do you think they're trying to accomplish?
Well, really, I don't know. I sometimes look at some of the things that, sure, they... We're like all Americans, yes. We want equality in all things. And sometimes I think in going about getting this equalization as far as our country is concerned, that we sometimes forget that some of the things that we need and we've been using, let's don't use that as a battleground. And sure, like anybody else, I want all the equality that this nation and our Constitution can afford for every citizen of this land.
But you used an expression a moment ago, you're prepared for it.
Yes, preparation is important. Preparation. You see, to me, the first prerequisite of a first-class citizen is knowing how to take care of the community in which you live. And then it spreads abroad.
We're visiting with one of the greatest athletes in track and field the world has ever known, Jesse Owens. And we'll continue our visit in just 1 minute. And I'm going to ask Jesse more about the Olympic boycott by Negroes and what effect it's having not only on the athletes, but on the Negro community as well. So stay right with us, right here on the Monitor Beacon. And this is Joe Garagiola. Ready right now to continue our visit with one of the genuine immortals of sports, Jesse Owens. Jesse, getting back to the current move by some Negroes to boycott the Olympics, what effect do these threats and the picketing and the fiery speeches by people like Rap Brown, does that affect only the Negro athletes or the Negro community too?
It has an effect on the Negro people, per se. Look, you live in America. And living in America, you have certain privileges to speak out. And this is every man's right. Rap Brown and the rest of the boys, if they want to speak out, that is their privilege to do so. But sometimes I think that when we began to stand around and persuade other people to follow what we want without giving two sides to the story, then sometimes I think we're wrong.
If you were Avery Brundage of the International Olympic Committee, would you have a solution to this problem as far as the proposed Negro boycott?
I don't think that any citizen or any one man has the solution to all of our problems. Avery Brundage, of course, when we begin to talk of him, we're speaking now not from the local standpoint, but we're speaking from the international standpoint. He happens to be president of the International Olympic Committee. Avery Brundage, yes, is an outspoken man. And sometimes I think that as we speak, we think. Sometimes the things that he does, and I think he does it from the standpoint of International Olympic Committee, and he's not concerned with the political aspects, because in the Olympic Games itself, there are no politics and there is no religion. And I think he adhere to these particular principles in some of the things that they do. But on the other hand, I think that the committee itself, in his wisdom, and they certainly have age there, should begin to think in terms of what the political implication is going to mean to other nations of the world. And as far as our own boycott in this country is concerned, I think it can be settled, not by him, but by members of our own Olympic Committee, and certainly by the leadership of our communities in which we live throughout this nation. The boycott, of course, has come about because of housing and because of lack of jobs and because of lack of opportunities for many
to create attention.
And this is one area.
Jesse, I'm going to ask you this question because I got such a marvelous answer from Elston Howard, who I know you know well. When did you find out you were black?
Well, you know, I didn't really find out until I was a freshman in college. When I went to junior high school in Ohio, we had a school that was well mixed. We had Jewish, the greatest population of our school was Jewish. The next was Italian, and then there were the Negro. And there was no difference, and I represented the school at all of its meetings downtown. I happened to be president of our student council. I happened to be president of our guards at the school, and I was also captain of our basketball, baseball, and track team. So when I got to college and I started to travel, and then I found out that I could not eat in certain places. And this is why I say that the change has come. Because when I was a freshman at Ohio State, if I didn't eat on the campus, I couldn't eat off the campus. But times have changed and have gone down through the years that in the year 1961, my daughter became homecoming queen at Ohio State University.
And that's a day you must have really felt like.
It was a great day, greater than any track victories that I had ever gained in my life.
Thank you, Jesse. Spoken like a justifiably proud father. For the past few monitor minutes, we've been talking with Jesse Owens, one of the greatest track and field athletes America has ever produced, a true champion and a thorough gentleman. Another proud papa is a guy named Frank. Here's his daughter, Nancy.
I'm not gonna say everything is okay, 'cause okay is not the way that I feel. I'm not gonna be any fool's Christmas tree. Let 'em hang gifts on me that aren't real. giving in to a smile or a grin on a face I might never see again. I'm not gonna fly in some big bony sky on a life that I know just can't win. And I'm not gonna take second best. No, I've got no use for the rest. The world, you better hear what I say. Cause for me, true love could be.
The other day on the Today Show, I got to thinking out loud about that phrase, to each his own. You know, everyone has their own particular thing, as today's high school or college student puts it. Well, Kate Smith's theme for many years has been the song, When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain. It doesn't mean that Kate, one of the most popular singers of all time, is a mountain climber. But you're going to be surprised when you hear her reveal her favorite activities as she visits with Monitor reporter Johnny Andrews.
I know you love speedboats, and you own, I think, three or four of them, don't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yes, I have my home in Lake Placid, New York, in the Adirondacks, is on an island out in the middle of a very large lake, and the only way we can get back and forth to the mainland is by boat. There are no bridges, so consequently, those who live on the islands must have boats to commute back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
With the weather as it is in mountains, we have lots of rain, so I had to have a closed boat that we can go back and forth in. A cabin type, and then I have a fast speedboat, a runabout, and then we have a utility boat for the caretaker to haul the groceries and the boxes and luggage and all that sort of thing.
But here's something I didn't know till the other day. I read in one of the columns that you had given up snow skiing. I didn't know you had taken it up in the first place.
I had
to
give up both water skiing and snow skiing because in 1963, yes, or early in 64 it was, I slipped in Florida and fell and broke my foot in two places, my left foot, under the ankle, which is very important for skiing. You must
mm-hmm.
have good, strong ankles for skiing. And in the forward part of the foot, which weakened my foot, and I found out then when I tried to ski that I did not have the control of the left foot that I should have. As a matter of fact, I found myself on the ground more than on the skis. And when I spoke about it to the doctor, he said, well, I would suggest that you give it up because you're just going to wind up breaking that foot again.
Well, have you replaced skiing with some other active sports?
Well, I stayed with my golf.
Good.
And I gave up my tennis quite a few years ago because I found that a little arduous with my weight as I picked up a little more weight. As I say, I use a surfboard now for going around the lake and back of my big speedboat rather than the skis. That's, as a solid board, and you don't have to have that balance that you need for water skiing.
But it's a taxation on your muscles, too.
Yes, it is.
Great
exercise. But they're geared or keyed up to it. They're keyed up to it.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of swimming, too, John. A lot of swimming. I always have been a long-distance swimmer. I like swimming very much. So that satisfies me.
Good
And, of
for
course,
you.
I love all sports to witness.
You don't have time, Kate. You got three boats. You must be getting ready to invade Rhode Island. Water skiing. That's Kate Smith. By no means just a spectator when it comes to sports. Boating, swimming, golf, tennis, snow, water skiing. That's participating. Right now, you have a chance to participate, too. Not talking about sports. Just a six-second sing-along. You ready?
Nationwide, it's
just in case you didn't know, Monitor covers the nation. Yes, sir.
And in Manchester, New Hampshire, you'll hear us on WGIR. A brief time out here while stations identify themselves and then monitor returns. This is Joe Garagiola.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York. Louis Jourdan and Susan Strasberg star in Disorder, a drama set in Milan, on the Sunday Film Festival tonight at 11:30.
Judith Crist said, fine acting, all the facets of the corruption of society. Watch the New York television premiere of Disorder tonight at 11:30. The time is now 8:30.
Time for some Monitor music, and the voice of Don Ho is heard during White Silver Sands.
Where the deep blue pearly waters wash upon white silver sands. There on the brink of love I kissed her, and obeyed my heart's man. Where the deep pearly water wash upon white silver sand, we watch the sun set in the evening in a far and distant land. So here beneath God's blue heaven, there's a place I must go through. See the sun set in the evening for the one I know. Where the white silver sand. There on the brink of love I kissed her.
Love I kissed her.
And obeyed
my
heart's man.
Heart's a man.
So here we need God's blue heaven. There's a place I must go. See the sun set in the evening with me, oh, a little more than all. Where the deep and pearly waters wash upon white silver sand. There on the brink of love I kissed her. And oh, baby, my heart's a man.
Next on Monitor, the so-called Nashville saxophone sound by Boots Randolph on a song dedicated to Fred Astaire, a touching title called Fred.
Thank you. Go north or south, go east or west. Just get in your car and we'll head for the best.
Say, you don't even need a car. Monitor is great to have around the house every weekend. My name is Joe Garagiola, and later this half hour, Chris Economaki gives us the latest word from auto racing on his regular feature, Sport of Speed. And just 3 minutes from now, one of the greatest names in professional sports, John Unitas, the quarterback for the Baltimore Colts, and a man who doesn't take no for an answer. Monitor Music, group therapy from a small circle of friends.
Promise me you will be by my side through thick and thin. If you say you will stay, we can let our love begin. In return, take this heart of mine. Just remember you'll never find a heart so kind or another love so
each profession has its own language. In professional sports, one of the pet expressions is, hang tough. Now, a guy who hangs tough is a guy who just will never get discouraged, no matter how often he's defeated, rejected, or refused. Johnny Unitas, the Baltimore Colts quarterback, is a hang tough kind of guy. Perhaps you saw him earlier today on NBC TV's coverage of the Pro Football and Baseball Players Golf Tournament. If you did, you saw him hang tough with that golf swing of his. But football players will tell you that he's got a lot of bulldog in him, and it's his kind of ruggedness and determination that becomes obvious as he talks about his career with Monitor reporter Larry King.
John, the name Unitas, what's the derivation?
Lithuanian.
Were your parents from there?
No, my mother was from there. My father was born in New Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
When you were a kid, you grew up where?
In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Was football your game when you were 12 years old?
12 years old.
You know,
I played just about everything, Larry. I've played baseball, basketball, football, a little bit of soccer, softball. Everything was imaginable. I played it. All sports have been my field. I would think that I can recall in the eighth grade that the nun that we had, I guess she had some time to kill one time, 15 minutes or so. So she went around through the class and asked everybody to write down on a piece of paper what they thought they would like to be. And my ambition at that particular time, that I wanted to play professional football.
You wrote that down?
This was in the eighth grade. This was back in about 48, I guess, 47.
Do you agree with those who say the good athlete, the really good athlete, could excel in many sports? In other words, if you took a man out of football, if we can remove you from it and we take Sammy Baugh. Now, if we can go back to Sammy Baugh's childhood and take him at age 10, and instead of football, direct him in baseball or direct him in basketball, the odds are he'd be pretty good, because natural athletes are that.
Well, he had the raw ability, let's put it that way. He's got the abilities, and it's a matter, as you said, of direction. And I think that anything that you get into, regardless of whatever it is, you have to enjoy doing it. You could take Sammy Ball, who might be a great athlete, great football player, and put him into baseball, but he might not like it.
Yeah, if you don't like it, then you're losing.
Get at it. That's right. You're not directing 100% of your attention to the sport primarily because you don't like it.
Were you a star football player in high school? Did you play in Pennsylvania?
Yes, I was.
You were All-State?
I was all Catholic. We had a small Catholic school. We had 300 kids, and the majority of those were girls. And we played in a small Catholic school group, this type of thing.
Did you play quarterback?
Yes, I was. It's a funny way I got into playing quarterback. I was a halfback at the time, and our quarterback stepped into a hole or something and broke his ankle. And because I've always had a fairly strong arm, the coach threw me in a quarterback a week prior to the opening game, and I've been playing there ever since.
Did you get many scholarship offers? No. That small school, I don't imagine you would.
No, I had an opportunity to go to Notre Dame, which had always been my lifelong ambition. I guess everyone at that particular time's ambition was to go to Notre Dame. But I went up to Notre Dame, and when I was getting out of high school, I was about 5'10" and 135 pounds. So going up to Notre Dame and seeing, of course, these huge people who were playing up there, the coach who at that time was Frank Leahy and the assistant Bernie Crimmins, I talked to them, and of course Crimmins said that I was, wrote me a letter back later and said that was too small for that type of brand of football.
So you went to Louisville?
Went to the University of Louisville.
Scholarship?
Scholarship, right.
Now, this is kind of a cloudy period to many sports fans, because the name John Unitas was not a well-known national name in collegiate football,
right.
Maybe partially due to the fact that Louisville does not play the kind of schedule University of Kentucky plays.
Right, definitely. We played schools like Cincinnati, Dayton, Xavier's of Ohio, Center College.
Were you ever a small college All-American nominee?
No, I was never anything in small college, really. I was never All-American there. I was, in one year, I think I was about the third or fourth leading passer in the country.
What did you major in?
I'm a double major, one in economics and the other one in physical education.
Not bad, huh? John Unitas, physical education and economics major in college, and one of the greatest professional football players. As far as economics, you ever stop to think about it? You watch John's economy of motion when he spots an end downfield. That's all, brother. 6 points. Vicky Carr is a young lady who is about to move from the background to the foreground.
He will walk into the room and look at me, and I'll melt away. He will smile his little smile, and he will see how I melt away. I will melt away. He will press his lips to mine. Let him be mine. I will softly pray and go. Deep in me.
you're a regular Monitor listener, you know that we always go right to the source for any story. So the following greeting comes to you from a fine old gentleman in a pub on Mercer Street in Dublin.
This is Congregation, Dublin, Ireland. Wishing all my friends all over America a lovely Patrick's Day, and I hope you sleep well. Good luck now. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Joe Garagiola here with more of Monitor at 13 minutes before the hour. And here's Frankie Lane without a whip or a mule train in sight, doing one of his latest songs, I Found You.
I knew birds must be singing, ah, but I couldn't hear their song. And then that miracle happened, that sweet mystery of life. Darling, I found you. Your eyes told me a story, that I can never forget. And then that miracle happened, that sweet mystery of life. Darling, I found you. Laid by two, laid by two. So, oh, darling, stay beside me. Never let me go. Say you love me always with all your heart and soul. Let that miracle happen. That sweet mystery of life. Tell me, darling, that I found you. And now I love you. Yes, I love you.
If you're an auto racing fan, Mal Allen would like your attention right now.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed. It's time for your weekend checkpoint with Chris Economaki with action from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the refiners of world-famous Pennsylvania-grade crude oils. Chris will be along in a moment, but first, this message. You know, quite often people ask us, what's so great about Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oils? Well, let's put it this way. Some oils take several days to produce. Pennsylvania crudes took a million years. Nature has never produced a crude oil quite like it. Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oils never get so stirred up that they forget what they're supposed to do. When is your club holding its next rally? For just $1, you get six big checkpoint signs, windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100, and a pad of 120 rally scoring slips. Send your dollar to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. Now, here's Chris Economaki.
The weatherman and St. Patrick today combined to give David Pearson the break he's been looking for since the middle of last season. The Spartanburg, South Carolina driver, who after winning the 1966 NASCAR championship for Dodge, switched to Ford last year and then somehow could not win a race. He was second five times in 500-mile events, and last week was on the pole at Rockingham, North Carolina, and yesterday qualified at Cougar for second starting spot Tennessee. But in each case, the weatherman intervened, and races were postponed. Pearson wheeled his Holman and Moody Ford Torino to victory. The Allison brothers, Bobby and Donnie, Paul Goldsmith and Buddy Baker, all fell by the wayside during the 250-miler, which Pearson won at 77.2 miles an hour. The yellow caution flag waved for 71 of the 500 laps, but always for minor incidents. In Brands Hatch, England today, Booth McLaren had a big afternoon with his new Formula One car, powered by Ford's V8 Cosworth engine, winning the race of champions. Pedro Rodriguez and world champion Denny Hulme were runners-up in the non-title event. Al Unser in a Ford power car was second. A.J. Foyt was in the first 10 when the race finished just a few minutes ago. The race was a three-way duel all the way, involving McCluskey, Bobby Unser, who had won the pole with a record 155.7 mile an hour lap, and Art Pollard. With 20 miles remaining, McCluskey came out of the pits and lapped Unser, who then tried to repass McCluskey and spun, sending leader Pollard into the wall. John Cock calmly motored into the lead as Unser restarted to finish fifth. And in Reading, Pennsylvania, the Eastern Modified Stock Car Opener was postponed 1 week until next Sunday because of rain. This is Chris Economaki for Monitor Sport.
Sport of Speed is heard every weekend. Next Saturday, Chris Economaki will bring you exclusive live monitor coverage of the Sebring 12-hour Grand Prix of Endurance auto race direct from trackside in Sebring, Florida. Continuing reports and an interview with the winner next Saturday. The 12-hour Sebring Grand Prix live on monitor.
Stay right here on NBC.
The group The Lettermen, the songs Love is Blue and Green Sleeves.
My world, now I'm without you. Gray, gray, my life is gray. Cold is my heart since you went away. Alas, my love, you do me wrong to cast me off discourteously. And I have loved with you so long, delighting in your company. When we met, how the bright sun shone.
The highway at the legal limit. At first it's fun, then it's routine. Finally, it's monotonous. And that's when the driving drowsies strike. Don't take extra chances. Pull over and fight back with No-Doze. No-Doze has the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, and it's not habit-forming. No-Doze. No car should be without it.
Billy Vaughan's orchestra and Lolly. Today is straddled by presidential birth dates. Yesterday was the birthday of James Madison. Tomorrow marks the birthday of Grover Cleveland. The important events of today, in fact of this very hour, are covered next by NBC Monitor News, so stay tuned. This is Joe Garagiola.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
This is Lee Leonard inviting the housewives of New York to close ranks and join forces with me. Weekdays from 11 till 2 on WNBC. Every day is a battle against the mundane, the ordinary, the trite. So get in the fray with Lee's Army. You'll grant there's a difference in your day.
Introducing the youngest, smallest, lightest, newest, strongest All-America team, the President's All-America team.
Fred Will, 11, Wisconsin.
Tonadio, 10, California.
Paul Nicropolis, 17, New York.
Diane Nicholson, 14, Maryland.
These are just four of the 50,000 kids who won an award last year. To make the team this year at school, you have to run, jump, pull up, sit up, and throw a softball. Can you make the President's All-America team? You'll never know unless you try out. President's Council on Physical Fitness.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.